Geography. Free space for geography. Extending teaching and learning methods beyond the boundaries of campus.
Did you hear about Frontline?
Frontline,
by the way, has outstanding productions.
Geography Frontline.
Hey Frontliners, how's it going? It's been a long time since I put up episode 122. And that was back in the States, back in Austin. And now I'm back in Germany and working at my university in Mainz and enjoying the fresh spring in Wiesbaden and, right on the other side of the Rhine River. Not to compare with the heat in Texas, I tell you. So after working like a dog to get the first lectures and seminars ready there, of course, some time for a brand new episode of Geography Frontline. So if you're new to the show, you'll find different kind of sections, some music, and always the chance to actively participate in the show. So sending in comments via email, voicemail, and Facebook, that's all possible, and there is more. So let's start with our main topic for today. And as I talked about Austin before leaving the United States, I decided to tell you a little about my hometown today. And to prove that it's always possible to find geographic content right on your doorsteps, we talk about Wiesbaden today, and the main topic is historicism. Wiesbaden. Have you ever been in the capital of Hesse before? If not, you should consider to spend a visit, to just go there. It's really nice, not only from a geographic point of view, but in general. It's nice. The city got long roots going long back in time to ancient Roman time when the Matiaca settled here. And because it's hot springs, Wiesbaden soon became a Roman colony. And after that, a medieval center, and later a baroque place for recreation. Very nice. And we still have that hot springs today here in the downtown area. Well, that's really cool, especially in winter when you have snow and all the hot springs coming out of the ground, and you see the all the water really hot. It's about I don't know, 68 degrees Celsius. What's that in Fahrenheit? Help me out, frontliners. I just looked that up. Anyways, so if you're wondering the city streets today, you don't find many Roman or medieval structures, but houses built in the 19th century and early 20th century, but mostly from the 19th century. And if you look up why that is the case, you can read on the city's website. Wiesbaden is throughout the 19th century city. This unique development is based on how today's capital of Hesse made rapid strides during the century from being a modestly small town of 2,500 inhabitants in 1800 to becoming a large city of 100,000 in 1905. Hey, think about it. 2,500 inhabitants in 1800, and about 100 years later, the city grows from 2,500 to 100,000. Wow, that's kind of extreme, right? Really extreme. And this unusual growth drove new construction at a furious pace, the website goes on. Yeah, you bet. But the city doesn't look monotonous. No. No way. Because the buildings were erected in the styles of historicism. And that's the main topic, as I told you. And so let's read a little about historicism. Yeah, historicism, surprising changes, the website continues, in form, changes in form and variety of styles are the reasons why this development did not result in monotonous mass construction, which can quickly be the response to an urgent need for residential space. Of course, Wiesbaden continued to develop over the past 100 years, hey. And today the city also reflects architectural form language of the 20th century. Nevertheless, since the city was fortunate enough to have survived the Second World War, with only relatively moderate damage, today it is the most important urban monument to historicism in Germany. Wow. So, we do learn two important things from these first passages. Wiesbaden Wiesbaden got a lot of houses built in the historicism style, right? Why? Not only because the city wasn't destroyed during World War II, but also because it was only constructed in the 19th century and not before. Otherwise, you would have lots of medieval houses, right? European aristocracy, the website goes on, or actually it's another website. I post all the links to the show notes. You can read that for yourselves if you want to. So European aristocracy and high nobility have influenced the social life as well as the architectural development of the former world-sparse city Wiesbaden. Today, magnificent villa districts and representative building fronts with individual histories still bear witness to the peak of the period of historicism. This epoch has marked the architectural style of the city, and it is responsible for the generous urban development. Urban development, ding! Sounds geographic, right? So now, we can turn towards historicism and ask what this style of architecture actually means. This is quite interesting if you are an urban geographer, especially for settlement geography, I'd say. So being able to tell about a city's growth and development by looking at its buildings, just by looking at the buildings, that's a nice skill, right? Really? So let's hear about what historicism means. Historicism can be seen as the finale of classic architecture. Despite other styles, it used the construction methods and interior designs from antique over Islamic to Gothic architecture, but instead of making such techniques visible, they added other styles from the past to the facade design. They added other styles from the past to the facade design. So do you recall any styles that have been used? For the outside of the houses. What about Romanesque? Gothic? Renaissance, right? Baroque? And Classicism? There are all that different kinds of elements that tell you about if a facade is, for example, neo-Gothic or neo-Baroque. So not actually Gothic or Baroque, but some in a neo style, so a new, reinvented way. Think about narrow, tapered, high windows, for example. So this would be a Gothic element. Or what about oval elements? Oval elements, clearly Baroque style, clearly. So historicism cites all these different epochs, sometimes all mixed up in a single facade. Today you could also call it eclecticism, right? Like in postmodernity, in postmodern architecture. For example, in fact, the amount of buildings erected in historicism style is so high that the city council decided to apply for a listing in the UNESCO World Heritage List. Hey, and there you have it again, right? We've talked about World Heritage some episodes ago. Diocletian's Palace, remember? Yeah. So, what I'm trying to say is, with this example of settlement geography of my hometown, is the following. The next time you're walking through your city, through your hometown, try to deconstruct it into its epochs. When was your city, town, or village founded? Do you know that? Have any idea? Look that up. It's interesting. Hey, you're a geographer. Come on. So, do you still find medieval elements? Roman buildings? Baroque structures? Or is your neighborhood maybe a perfect example for modernity or even post-modernity? Because you won't find like Roman elements in a United States city, right? So think about those elements, those things, and ask those questions. By learning more about your city and your neighborhood, you not only learn something for your job as a geographer, but also you learn also about your own environment. And that's not too bad, I like that idea. Just a kind of a win-win. And so if you should stumble over something interesting in your hometown or your neighborhood, please let us know. Just let us take part in it. Send your examples of settlement geography on your doorsteps to comment at geography.com or call the Skype voicemail for a comment. The Skype name is Geography. And there's even a German landline, a telephone number for that. If you want to call from Germany, you can dial the +611. Oh, no, it's not plus. It's 0611, right? It would be +49 from out of Germany, and then 0611-150-9960. And do that and tell us about your examples for settlement geography. Yeah, and not to produce a show that's way too long for a hard working day, let's throw in some music, and yeah, that kind of fits today's topic. This is We Are the Arsenal from the album There Will Come Soft Rains, and the song is called Like History. are The Arsenal with their song Like History from the album There Will Come Soft Rains. You can find this song on the Podsafe Music Network. Listen to it on music.miviu.com or go to iTunes to download the song for 99 cents or the whole 6-song album for $2.99 only. That's really a good price. Hmm? Links to both the US and the German iTunes store are, as always, in the show notes.
What's that sound?
And this is a section of the show where you can test your auditive skills. One urban sound that can be heard in almost every city in the world. But do you recall it? Or do you not spend any attention to the soundscape around you? Hmm? Always remember, you can only recognize what you already know. So let's sensitize ourselves once again and listen to last episode's sound riddle. Any idea what that is? If I'm not mistaken, yeah, just look that up again. And nobody sent in a suggestion for that sound riddle of 122. And that's kind of sad. And by the way, you just have to go to our Facebook page on facebook.com/geography, and you can simply post your suggestion right there. So frontliners, help me out here and try to tell us what causes such a sound. So next week, we hopefully have a winner. And I don't just say winner out of no reason. So do you know what? Let's make this section a little more competitive. Starting today, I'll count all the right answers given in the upcoming sound riddles, including this one. And whoever got the first 5 correct answers for 5 sound riddles, right? He or she will win a brand new Frontline t-shirt. Hey! Competition. If you take a look at geography.com and there at the shop, geography shop, you get the idea how these shirts look like. Now, most of them are green, some are white and black, and it's just black and white with the Geography Frontline logo. And I'm currently working on an international version. But if you are interested, you can still order the German ones, at least for now. I'm sure I'll just, get them off the shop later when the international versions are available. So send in your suggestions to comment@geography.com, call the voicemail, or post your suggestions on Facebook. And on Facebook, I'll only count the first correct answers posted, not all the people saying, oh yeah, that's right, that's a bus or whatsoever. So only the first one who got the right answer. And so for 5 right answers, you win a Frontline T. And last week, the Frontline community on Facebook reached the next magical number, 400 likes. So let's talk about everything that's new on Frontline on Facebook. Well, one thing really caught my eye in the last weeks, and that actually was an email by Stefan. And Stefan wrote, hey Torsten, I think this might be interesting. It's a documentary about fracking in the USA by Josh Fox, and it shows how dangerous it is for the environment and the people living in these areas. So it definitely is a huge environmental risk. Greetings, Stefan. Hey Stefan, that's an awesome link. Because he sent me links to the official homepage and to the movie trailer. And then I dig a little deeper into the whole thing. And because we talked about fracking some episodes ago. And I found a YouTube link to the whole video, to the whole movie. Well, 150 minutes or something, 1 hour 50 minutes. And that's amazing. So you can find this link on our Facebook page. On facebook.com/geography. And if you only take the time to watch about 10 minutes of it, only 10 minutes, 15 minutes, it will blow you away. What an awesome documentary. I'm pretty sure that we haven't talked about fracking for the last time. So whenever you find out something new about this topic, about fracking or another topic we've discussed some episodes ago, please go ahead and post or email or voicemail your findings, yeah? This way we can stay up to date on each topic and continue our various discussions. That's why podcasts are so cool, really. So let's talk about former subjects discussed in the show. Last episode, we spoke about the domain, a mall slash part of the city slash mixed-use urban space in Austin, Texas. And I wanted to know what your thought on this, on this thing, mall, city part, mixed-use urban space, the domain is, or what your thoughts are. And I ask you, what is the domain? Answer A, a premium mall. Nobody thought it was a premium mall. Answer B, a modern urban lifestyle. Hey, that's 50% of the frontliners voted for answer B. And answer C, mixed-use urban space. There we have the second 50% of the frontliners. Nobody voted for answer D, reinvention of the city, or had another opinion. So, this quick vote is always a good and easy way to leave your comments on the main topic of the show. So this week, I would like to know the following. Should Wiesbaden become a World Heritage Site because of historicism? Answer A. Of course, it's a perfect example. Answer B. Hey, why not? Or answer C. No, there are too many heritage sites anyways. Or answer D, if you have another opinion. So go to this week's episode site on geography.com or check out the direct link on our Facebook page. And I'm really curious what you'll have to say about my hometown. Before we talk about this week's announcements, let's grab a good old book. Or, I'm trying to simulate some paper here. Grab a good old book. or just the iPad. And read from Alexander von Humboldt's Voyage to the Americas in 1799. Last time we stopped when he described two canoes approaching his ship out of the mist. Very mysterious. What happens next? Let's go on reading. We fired a gun as a signal for them, and though we had hoisted Spanish colors, they drew near with distrust. These canoes, like all those in use among the natives, were constructed of a single trunk of a tree. In each canoe, there were 18 Gaikeria Indians, naked to the waist, and of very tall stature. They had the appearance of great muscular strength, and the color of their skin was something between brown and copper color. Now, seen at a distance, standing motionless and projected on the horizon, they might have been taken for statues of bronze. We were the more struck with their appearance, as it did not correspond with the accounts given by some travelers respecting the characteristic features and extreme feebleness of the natives. We afterwards learned, without passing the limits of the province of Cumana, the great contrast existing between the physiognomy of the Guaycarias and that of the Chaimas and the Caribs. So Humboldt is describing what he sees, right? And that goes for all humans as well as for mountains and flowers. He's basically doing it in the same way. Everything is categorized or described with an analogy, bronze-colored skin. I can imagine that. And another thing is kind of interesting. He talks about older travelogues he knows. So instead of only drawing conclusions out of what he had experienced firsthand, he also used literature to prepare himself for the trip. Yeah, and that is something we still do, right? Read some scientific books and journal articles before we go on, let's say, a field trip, right? When we were near enough to hail them in Spanish, the Indians threw aside their mistrust and came straight on board. They informed us that the low islet near which we were at anchor was Coche, which had never been inhabited. And that Spanish vessels coming from Europe were accustomed to sail farther north between this island and that of Margareta to take a coasting pilot at the port of Pampatar. Our inexperience had led us into the channel to the south of Coche, and as at that period the English cruisers frequented this passage, the Indians had at first thought or taken us for an enemy's ship. The Guaycarias belonged to that tribe of civilized Indians who inhabited the coasts of Margareta and the suburbs of the city of Cumana. Next to the Caribs of Spanish Guiana, they are the finest race of men in terra firma. They enjoy several privileges because from the earliest times of the conquest, they remained faithful friends to the Castilians. The King of Spain styles them in his public acts his dear, noble, and loyal Guaycarias. So there seem to be other tribes too, some that are treated not so nicely. But what about those privileges anyway? They're so dear and noble people. Do you think that they have been treated equally to the Spaniards, for example? I'm not so sure about that. Okay, just one last sentence. The Indians of the two canoes we had met had left the port of Cumana during the night. So, what are these Indians up to? Leaving in the night? That sounds suspicious. So let's hear about it in the next episode of Geography Frontline. This week, I found an interesting international conference that kind of fits perfectly to our historicism topic. Sustainability and heritage. How can the past contribute to a sustainable future? That's the title of the conference. So, the conference takes place at Orkney College, University of the Highlands and Islands in Kirkwall, Scotland, from May 29th to 30th, 2012. And on the website, it says, heritage is recognized as being vitally important to sustainability. Heritage reflects our ongoing relationship with the environment and plays a role in defining modern culture and identity. It's not thus simply concerned with the past, but it's about balancing conservation and change today and in the future. Sustainability is best understood through long-term perspectives on the interactions of people and environment. And this reflexive relationship is crucial to inform future practice and research in sustainable development and cultural environment management, and for promoting cultural diversity, sustainability, literacy, and education. Heritage is embedded in place and forms a strong link between humans and local landscapes. Heritage thus provides an important avenue to place-based learning, education for sustainability, and developing a genuine sense of stewardship and management for the long-term future. So if this sounds interesting for you, be sure to check out the website of the conference and just go ahead and book a flight to Scotland. This is it. Episode 1, 2, 3 of Geography Frontline has come to an end. Take a look at our Facebook site to find out more about the quick vote, the sound riddle, and the show notes. Read what other frontliners have to say and check out the latest episode logo for this week's episode right on top of the Facebook page. But whatever you do, frontliners, have a great week, everybody, and never forget, the network is us.